Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Martin, joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast, Chief Defender of the Faith, and a whole bunch of other nicknames. Brett, tell everybody about our guest. That's more important than you anyway.
So. Well, it's probably true, but it's interesting because we have a returning guest. We have Paul Michel back. But see, the last time was crazy because he was with a band called Spirit Animal, and this time he's with a band called Record Heat. But it's the same band. Paul, so glad to have you back, but, you know, obviously things have changed.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's. I'm a totally different human being now. You know, mm-hmm. The name changed. I've Maslow whatever hierarchy of needs. I'm at the top now. You know, I've been actualized, right? All that good stuff. Yeah. No, it's good. It was a necessary change, or it's gonna change. Long time coming. Basically, it was just a confluence of both, like our ups and downs with, you know, being on a major label and there was one. One person is no longer with us, our drummer. So it's the three of us, you know, the main writers anyway, are still around, and we just kind of felt like it was time for the change and the evolution. So it worked out. Yep.
So how difficult is that to kind of rebrand, you know, yourself?
I think the difficulty probably is like the conversations, you know, shouldn't we, what's going on, like why are we doing this, all that sort of stuff. That like the deep talk, you know, the corporate, you know, the structural stuff is pretty straightforward. You know, it's like, it's a little bit of Cal.
Hey,
you made it.
I had to sign up for Skype.
Hey Cal, I'm Brett. And I've also got my co-host Martin on with me. And of course, we've just been talking about actually the what it takes to rebrand Spirit Animal into Record Heat.
Yeah. I'll let Paul continue. It sounds like you got an answer.
I was talking about the legion of marketers and press agents that we had on the whole thing, right? It was pretty easy. I mean, we once we made the decision, we were like, oh yeah, cool, and we talked to the label that we're on now, and they were like, cool, we're down. Let's do it before this next release. So it kind of coincided with this release with our new EP one. And it just made sense. It was a good time, good transition period. It kind of happened, you know, at the end of a whole bunch of touring and a whole bunch of other stuff, and just kind of like felt like the right time, you know?
Now, of course, the new EP got released, I guess, March 12th. So just a little over a month ago. I mean, I really like it. Network for sure is probably my favorite track off of it. But like, so tell me about it, because it seems like a little bit of, you know, I think it's a bit of an evolution.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Cal.
I think it's an evolution is a good word for it, because I don't think that it's a thing apart from what we've already done. I think it's sort of a logical next step from songs like JFK and Yeah. And it's also, you know, I think we've mentioned this in a couple of other conversations with folks. It's definitely the most personal in terms of the lyrics and the stories that we're telling. You know, that's an evolution in and of itself, I think, is our sort of newfound comfortability with exploring our own feelings and vulnerabilities with respect to the music business and our careers and you know, a way to kind of have fun with them but also seriously. And I mean, art is self-expression, right? And so the closer you can get to expressing yourself honestly and genuinely, the more involved you are as an artist, I would say.
The lyrics are really what stand out for me. I mean, there's so many clever turns of phrase that are used. Who do you guys kind of write the lyrics all together, or is one individual the one who does the lyrics, or how does that work?
Well, Steve has to sing them, so Steve is the one who is steering the ship. But Paul and I will also occasionally contribute a turn of phrase or three when when we have something good.
It is a brutal process. Sometimes it's like we always like it's the phrase. What did he always say? He says, "We can beat this.
We can beat it.
We can beat it." I'll be like, this is it. This is the one. We're definitely going with this. And Steve's always back, like nods his head. He's like, we can beat this. Like, oh. But it worked out. It obviously worked out. But it, yeah. You know, it's a process.
How do you know then when a song is done?
You just know. Oh. Like,
yeah.
Like,
it's like, never done, is it?
No. Now that we don't have, we're not performing. I mean, when we perform, I guess there's always kind of a little bit of an evolution, you know, performance-wise, yeah. Constant, like kind of growth a little bit. You know, we'll do a couple things on stage. We're like, okay, this is cool. And so now that's kind of how the song becomes something new. But the actual recording is recording. Like we are super meticulous. You know, we basically write the song, then deconstruct the song, then play it live, and then put a whole bunch of parts on top of that live part, and then like take away a bunch of stuff. So I mean, it's like a constant, like we do so much to it to make it the thing that we all can agree on and are really happy with, which is true for the most part. I mean, like once we all kind of are like, okay, that's it, you know, that's when we know. And it takes a bit, and it takes a lot, and we are all detail oriented people and creative people and vocal people.
Opinions are being put out there is what you're saying.
Yeah. We're not afraid. I mean, we've known each other for so long at this point too. We're all like, you know, like the brother thing is real, you know, like we all love each other dearly, but we have no filter with each other, which is good. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
Creative process.
I would say if you want to distill our process down to something incredibly simple and reductive, we take the tune, the seed of the idea, and we just add as much shit as possible until you just can't add anymore. And then we peel back and remove as much as possible until you can't take off anymore. What you're left with, we hope, is a complete song that doesn't do any more or any less than it needs to.
Well, see, and it's interesting that you say it like that, because I always wonder when I listen to a song and I do hear a lot of, like, you know, certain flourishes or just little things that have been added to the music, I always wonder if that's the band, is that the producer hearing something? So, like, what does a producer bring to your music?
Well, we self-produce for the most part. We have a fourth member, in a de facto member, in Anthony Rocky Gallo. He's our engineer, and also like he basically co-produces with us and he mixes all the records. But he's in there with us, so it's again collaborative.
He doesn't mix all the records, but he mixed the new EP.
Right, he did. He's always there with us when we do make these decisions. So it's not like we don't throw a bunch of stuff to someone and then have it come back and be like, where are all those delays? Why is there an extra keyboard or anything like that? You know, we put them there. You know. Rocky's like, I'll just lower this one, like, or like put this one up, or like throw this somewhere here, over here. Have a, you know, throw 14 more guitars on there, you know, that sort of thing. So it's collaborative. We're never surprised by it. I guess sometimes we're surprised by Coop, because Coop will go away and it's like a little like cave, and then like he has a bunch of keyboards and he presses a bunch of buttons, and he comes back with like, you know, like a all the blips and tweaks and like weird, like, you know, sounds you hear.
Yeah, I would say even more than the blips and tweaks, which are often surprising, is the background vocals. He'll disappear and then he'll like, I'm the Eagles background vocal guy. My theory on background vocals is make it less, make it pretty. Steve's theory on background vocals is Looney Tunes. And I mean that as a compliment. Bring it back and I didn't know that Wiley cut in this band, but I'm so psyched that he is.
Now, what? I mean, obviously, there's just the three songs on this. Did you make more? Did three just feel like the right number?
We have a backlog of songs.
Yeah, I mean. Given that, of course, you know, we have the kind of this last year, whatever happened in this last year, but, you know, it strikes me that you probably would have a backlog of songs.
We actually finished, so we have so basically two EPs. We had six tunes that we had more or less finished up in February of 2020, right before, obviously, the pandemic hit. And so we kind of were sitting on them for the first few months, and then we decided that, you know, especially when we made the choice to change the name, we just figured, well, let's just start putting the stuff out. So we split them into two EPs, the first one being one, our sort of an introductory record heat, you know, new band name EP. And then we have another set of three. We don't quite have a timeline yet, but the tunes are we're kind of putting final mix tweaks on them right now, and those will be ready to go hopefully within before the end of the year, I'd say. Fingers crossed.
Nowadays, we're kind of in an era where the EPs and the singles is more important than making a full album. How do you guys feel about that?
I feel good. I like it. You know, there's always been kind of ebb and flow. You know, you think historically, you know, there were a bunch of pops. You know, people just put singles out all the time, you know, and then it wasn't until, you know, like the 70s or whatever, and you had like full length records and, you know, double records and triple records and all that sort of crap, and, you know, Smashing Pumpkins with Melancholy, that sort of stuff. So it's, I mean, it just ebbs and flows, and I think it's the right time for sort of an ebb. I mean, there's just music is so ubiquitous, and the way people consume music and stuff like that is pretty rapid, and so I don't know, attention spans just being attention spans, mine included. I'm too much Twitter, you know, too much infinite scrolling, you know. So like, so I think like having the bites and being able to constantly do things and be creative on our end is great. You know, it's like we have like something to do, we have something to put out, you have something to think about. You know, it's not just like put a bunch of songs out and then like sit in a van for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like another. So.
Yeah, I think that the pros and cons are pretty obvious both on both sides, and they're all valid. I mean, I do think that I love records, and I do think it's a little bit of a shame that the way we consume music now doesn't really allow for a deeper investment in the music and the artists that we love. At the same time, I really love that you don't have to spend $25 for one good song, and it's great that we can just drop music whenever we want, and that we don't have to like Paul said, spend 2 years crafting an entire record if we feel like we have this one tune that's great and immediate and we want to just put it out there. So, you know, there's no such thing as all good or all bad. I don't believe in that.
How do you try to cut through? You know, of course, there's such an enormous amount of music that gets released. Like, how do you guys try to cut through to get record heat to the masses?
Just make it as loud as possible.
Perfect.
I mean, yeah, that's like anything. We just, you know, we're just coping our fans. We have a great fan base that are rabid and constant, and they're awesome. So like, it's nice to have that. We know we put something out and there's a bunch of people that listen to it, you know, and then they tell their friends, and that's kind of how it happens right now. I mean, we do some marketing and stuff like that, but you know, for the most part, it's still, you know, old school in that way.
Your fans are called Spanimals, or at least they were. So what are they called now? Or do you guys have an idea of what you're going to kind of switch that to? Come on, you guys gonna lead them to the water now.
I think they're Spanimals as long as they want to be. We don't run the group. The group is independent of us. we're just happy that they're out there and that they're enjoying the music, and we don't tell them what to do.
So then, you know, one of the things that I'm really interested in is the NFT, the non-fungible token. I mean, I guess that's one way to give back to the fans, but I mean, how did that come up?
It's Steve. Steve,
yeah.
Steve was very online.
Yeah, he was actually on this quite a while ago, before it became a quote unquote thing. And you know, he actually had to explain it to our distributor when he introduced the idea. That's how far ahead of it he was. Yeah. But then by the time we dropped it, it sort of felt like it had run its course. Like the week prior. But we had some of our, we definitely had people swoop in and scoop it up, and it's been great to see people kind of appreciating what we were trying to do with it, and sort of seeing it for the attempt at a new way to make and distribute art. Yeah. And something that's exciting and not just some kind of cynical bandwagon thing. That was never the goal for us.
I'm jumping on the bandwagon. Brett and I are going to make one. I was wondering if you could tell us how.
It's a process. You have to, like, basically, like, go online, find someone who's going to, like, I think there's mining involved, and there's a whole bunch of craziness, and so, like, you basically have to pass it off to the gods of Bitcoin, whatever it is.
The random computer gods, please provide me with something that I'll never actually physically hold in my hand, but seems really cool.
I like it because I like the idea of, like, that was the problem with I don't think it was a problem necessarily, but, like, the, you know, being online and everything online and being intangible, you know, trying to think of it as a, you know, recreating the tangibility. Of a record. I mean, that's why people like LPs and stuff like that. I mean, it's really tangible, but, like, the NFTs, and I think, are kind of combining that sort of it's mine. I have this thing. I can see it and feel it and touch it, kind of, you know. Which I think, you know, from when I was young, that was a cool part of, like, having CDs or having whatever, you know. It's like I had a bunch of stuff that was mine, you know, and I had something to find, you know, like fashion or anything like that, right? I mean, like, you pick out the things that present you as you ideally want to be. Mm-hmm. I think things like NFTs and stuff like that are at least an attempt to recreate that with what we have, you know, and what the world is today, all that crap.
Well, and I think even just a willingness to try new things is always worth the shot.
Yep, exactly.
We want to try new stuff and take. Steve likes to say we like to take risks.
I like how this is kind of the way this goes. It's just like Steve says that we like to do this.
I can't answer this. I just don't understand. I didn't own a computer until like a year ago, so I just.
Doesn't even know most of the pedals. I don't think it's a.
Yeah, most of my pedals are Paul's.
you just like put your foot down on them and hope that they make good noises, and it's just really all good from there. It's like, ooh, what does this do? Sweet.
I want to get through life. If I can get through life understanding as few machines as possible, I feel like that I'll have lived a purposeful and meaningful life and existence.
You know, that's a pretty good statement overall. Like, I can be down with that. I mean, it wouldn't work for me, but I can certainly, you know, I respect the concept, no doubt.
Yeah. Skynet will never touch me.
Does that make it more challenging to be in a band, especially these days with all the ways that you have to record and the digital, like, tools and such?
For me personally?
Yeah.
Well, I did cave, and I downloaded a free digital audio workstation, and I learned how to turn the compression knob all the way up on my vocal.
What's that? Oh, no, I said you did. Yeah, I have to work with your vocals on the other end. Nasty little guys. Yeah, they're great, though.
No, I caved.
So then, during the pandemic, have you guys been recording? Like, are you getting together? Are you recording separately?
Little column A, little column B. Yeah, like we've done some together. We still have a bunch of stuff we need to work on. We're all doing, you know, fun things. I think for me especially, since I've always kind of done production work and recording and writing stuff, like, it's like, with the pandemic, you can just do whatever you want. Cal and I wrote a bunch of punk songs. like daddy, like NoFX punk songs just for fun, you know, like, it's like, and I don't know, it's been really fun in that sort of respect, to, like, not have to write for something. We have such a backlog of Record Heat songs that, you know, we can constantly kind of work on that sort of thing. So anything we do perfectly, like anything we do, like, creatively, it's like purely creative for the most part right now, which is fun, super fun.
Super fun, yeah.
Yeah, you guys obviously got together to do the acoustic version of Network. You guys look like you're having a great time there. What the hell? Let's just do this. Is that kind of how it came together?
We didn't learn it. Did we learn it that day? I think we learned how to play it acoustically that day. We were
I think we just sorted it out that day. We've done an acoustic version of every song we've released at this point. Is that right, Paul?
Which we have? What's the one we haven't done on this one? We haven't released Just Hits yet, have we? Or did we?
I don't know. Maybe we haven't released one, but we did sort of sort out an arrangement for it. And basically all our arrangements end up sounding like Ennio Marconi's Spaghetti Western sound. Which I think is fucking great. So as long as it's happening, we'll keep doing it.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all. What does it take then to turn one of your normal songs into an acoustic version? Besides adding spaghetti Western themes.
Yeah. It's really legitimately just us in the room. And we're like, because, you know, Steve already knows the lyrics and sang it. You know, we all have played it a billion times. So we kind of, you know, actually, that's not true. Cal always remembers the chords. And I just like watch him and like have to learn the song again. But it doesn't take me that long.
And there's a couple where I don't know the chords. I never bothered to learn. But that's with the acoustic stuff, we just sort of approach it like, how do you... You got to make sure you get the chordal harmonic movement in there somehow, and any whatever the sort of primary motif is. So between me and Paul, we can usually each cover one of those things, and that's really all you need. And maybe like throw a shaker in there if it feels a little empty or something, but it's not rocket science.
Tambourine.
One of my favorite bands, rock bands of all time, is Biffy Clyro, and they always. As I remember a quote from them, but whenever they'd be like press stuff, they would always just play the song acoustically. You know, they just do three dudes in the room and they play the song acoustically for the press, all the press. And I learned later that they were like, that's how we record the song and then we'll learn it acoustically before we put out the album. And if we don't like the way it sounds acoustically, we cut it from the album. Oh. And they're like that severe with it because they're like, if it doesn't sound good acoustically, it's not a good song. You know, if it doesn't sound good, all the parts stripped down. So luckily we found in a reverse sort of way that all the songs sound good acoustically. So, you know, yes, we don't have to cut them retroactively, I guess. But that's I always kind of liked it about the acoustic stuff. Like, you know, like, it's a surprise every time. Like, oh, it sounds cool, you know? And I think that's why when you see our smile on recording stuff, like, it's us being like, ah, shit, we did it, you know?
Thank God. Like, yeah.
Oh, thank God. That would be really annoying if you had to retroactively go back and like not release a song, or it's just like no, Just Hits is now called No Hit because we had to change it.
Can't hit.
It didn't sound good acoustically, so we had to go back and change the name of the song. Now you talk about Biffy Clyro, like. You know, what do you guys, like, do you all generally tend to agree on the music that you listen to, or do you come from these different influences?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, we tolerate.
I think it's one of the foundational components of this band has always been that we have never been of the same mindset in our own listening habits. So, you know, and it's actually the one great thing about it. Like and I think it's maybe why we sound the way we sound and how we do what we do is just the fact that we're all pretty much with all of us combined, we like everything, you know, Cal loves like country you know, like anything that's like a Beatles and anything that's like super melodic and, you know, crazily well written. I was in hardcore bands, you know. Steve, I don't think knew what rock was until he was like 23. You know, like it's like
App diet only. Full
yeah. Hip hop only for like all of high school and stuff. So
I think we learn a lot from each other's tastes more than like share each other's tastes. So I don't wouldn't necessarily put on the stuff that Paul or Steve listened to, but when they put it on, I feel like I'm learning a lot about other ways to hear and make music. And that, I think at the core, I think we talked about this in another interview, I think at the core of the way we function is we all sort of have a similar value system, creative value system. So even if our tastes aren't the same, the things that we seek out in our listening and in our writing, the things that we sort of believe in and aspire to be and are all pretty much the same, even if it doesn't always manifest in the same like sonic choice.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've always found it interesting how bands can kind of be together and have like completely different, you know, listening choices and yet still form a cohesive whole in that regard.
Yeah.
It's just kind of
us two. What's that?
Just kind of got to follow up on that. I kind of, how did you guys both come to join the band, and when did you guys both know it was right?
Is it right?
At this point, I hope so.
I didn't know until right now.
I've known Steve forever. We used to be roommates, like when we were, you know, first time living out on our own in DC. This was like a couple years ago, and so we had always been like, so he like. He'd always like, he was doing like production work for like hip hop and pop stuff. And I was doing, you know, like indie rock. I had my own new thing. So like we were in the same room, you know, and basically like we'd go back and forth and do a bunch of stuff that way. And then, but we never were in each other's projects, you know. I'd like play a bass line. He would like record it, or like I'd play some guitar, whatever, you know. And then he went out to LA for a little bit. And then he came back with a desire to be in a band. He was sick of just being a producer or like a solo artist, which is what he was kind of doing. And so we got together with two people originally. Then the guitarist that we originally had left and was like, you really should hang out with this dude, Cal, who saw our band and hated it.
That's the opposite. One of my best buds and a longtime musical collaborator was the old drummer for Spirit Animal before Ronan. And he mentioned that they were looking for a guitar player and he sent me the music and it was like super esoteric and synthy. And I was like, you guys aren't looking for a guitar player. No, you're wrong. No, you're not. So I was like, hey, show. And it was like so fun and so bombastic and Steve was just like doing all this wild karate on stage. And I was like, oh, I do see how I could fit into this vision. And then we got together and jammed and I just knew it was right, man. I knew.
There was that you magic. Complete me moment.
I felt whole for the first time in my 19 years.
You guys have been on, you guys have also toured with some incredibly cool bands. We're kind of getting closer to the point that that I think it's going to open up and touring is going to start to happen sometime late, you know, mid to late 2020 or 2021 now, if finally. You guys got any tour plans, anything that you'd like to do or anything, you know, anything you can break for us?
No.
Still, obviously, like, pretty early to us, I think. We just don't know what's going to happen. We sort of talked about maybe doing a one-off over the summer, but I think that there's still kind of a, even the bands that are announcing dates right now all have this caveat of, like, we might have to cancel still. But the dates if we don't. So, you know, short answer is no. Not yet.
Yeah, because the last time we talked, Paul, I mean, you guys were just about to go out on tour with Theory of a Dead Man. So how were those shows? Like, what were those, you know, obviously you had no idea that the world was going to end and you were going to stop touring. But, like, you know, what was it like for you to go from touring to not touring then?
From touring to not touring? I mean, like, the Theory guys, we have toured with them a couple times and they are, like, just friends, you know. So the tours with them were always great. I think we had been going so strong because we did, you know, we did Theory, we did
We did the Incubus run. We did a Cult run. We did, what else did we do? We did a
that year.
Again?
That year.
That year. Well, I'm not sure exactly which year we're talking about. I mean, like, there was like the one right before we
2018, I think, was
2019. Yeah.
2019. Yeah, that's it.
Well, we were winding down after the Cult in December anyway, so it didn't really impact our immediate schedule. It actually sort of almost coincided with our little, you know, taking a break, because we, like Paul said, we've been on the road for like 3 months, I guess, on and off between Theory and the Cult. So it didn't really impact us at all. It's only more after it's extended into the later part of the year that it was like, okay, this is, yeah, now it's interfering with our business big time.
Yeah.
Well, it's so interesting. Oh, sorry. But like, I guess when I think of like the Cult and when I think of Theory of a Dead Man, like, and then you guys, like, you seem more poppy and upbeat than either of those bands. So it's always like interesting to think about, like, how does that work when you wind up opening for a band like that?
It usually works okay. Right, Paul?
Yeah. No. I mean, the audience is, I mean, for the most part, I mean, for Theory, the audience was always like on board with us. It's such a weird thing, because they do, like, they are rock, but they're like, you know, like, they have some poppy elements and they have some melodic elements, and, you know, and we were just big bombastic, you know, performers live, and so everyone was on board. I mean, we always had great fans, a lot of fans we, like, you know, we share with Theory. We shared a bunch of fans with, like, Incubus. We shared a bunch of fans with, like, a bunch of the people, you know, like, they would, like,
Theory, yeah, has a pretty good sense of humor that comes through in their songs, and I think that their fans saw that in us too and appreciated it and got a kick out of our. But we, you know, we toured with Fits and the Tantrums too, which is maybe an extreme in the other direction. So we like to think that we can fit in on either side of that spectrum.
Not quite like the old days of, like, I pictured the country scene where it's just like you play behind chicken wire or something like that and avoid getting beer bottles thrown at you.
Yeah, like that scene in Blues Brothers. But anyway, exactly. Yeah, you guys being compared to, on your Wikipedia page, it mentions you're compared to Talking Heads, the Black Keys, Faith No More, and Red Hot Chili Peppers. So kind of, how do you feel about being compared to other bands, or those bands in particular?
Yeah.
Pretty great. I mean, Talking Heads. What were the other ones?
Let's see, with Black Keys, Faith No More, Red Hot Chili Peppers, all great bands.
Yeah. That feels pretty accurate, too. I actually don't listen to a single one of them, but I bet them all.
I loved Faith No More when I was a kid, you know, like, they I mean, I think more, I mean, like, they more than anything, I'm super psyched about compared to it. They were, like, always like a, not to say that the Red Hot Chili Peppers aren't smart, but they seemed like a smarter version of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, where there was, like, they had more going on, they had more, like, you know, like, weirdness, more technical stuff, you know, like, we're not afraid to go, like, any direction.
That's Mike Patton, right?
Yeah, Mike Patton.
Yeah, I used to really like Mr. Bungle in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's better to be compared to bands that tend to, like, push the envelope than, you know, it's just like being compared to those bands that say have released the same album 14 times. And it's kind of like, look, we're being compared to, like, I mean, lots of bands sound like AC/DC, and I love AC/DC, but they tend to release the same album a fair bit. And so I think that when you, it's like, I think, you know, yeah, you're sounding differently than that, which is good.
Consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. I think that's it. Yeah. Not mine. I won't take
That's true. Yeah, no, I could. Well, I don't think any of us have the disposition to stay still. You know, I think all of us are pretty, yeah, I don't know, just either like ADD or something that we need to, like, just, like, you know, I would just get bored too easy with, like, doing the same thing. We've never been that band. We've never, like, kind of never thought about doing the same thing over and over again. In fact, steadfastly refused to look backward ever, you know? So it's a, It's fun.
I can't believe in the past. I don't
really want to catch it.
Well, and I guess it's probably a matter too of trying to kind of train your fans to expect something different, as opposed to training them to expect exactly the same.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's self-selecting, right? Like, you know, like if you are a band that has a big hit and everyone loves you for that big hit, and then you just try to recreate that hit over and over and over again, you'll have that one fan, but they'll be like, oh, that hit's not as good, and you'll decline, right? I mean, but if you have a band, like, you know, like Radiohead is the best example of that, right? They were like, oh, cool, we have this one hit, and then, like, they were like, well, screw everyone else. We're going to make music that we like to make. And basically self-selected, you know? Their audience was like, cool, this is what we don't, you know, they would be really bummed if Radiohead put out an album that sounded like the one before it, you know? And that's the thing, yeah. So I don't know if it's, like, necessarily training, but, like, definitely, like, it's finding the right friend group, you know?
Although I would say the most shocking thing that Radio could do, the most daring thing they could do at this point in their career is put out Pablo Honey 2. That would be a real statement.
Some dumb alt rock. Oh, God. I love that album. Great. It's a great album.
Yeah. Heath rock. It's...
Everyone wants to play guitar? Come on. No one's been that earnest since 1993, I don't think, you know?
Oh, yeah, you know what? It's like that old saying, you know, just when you think you got all the answers, I change the questions. Just that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Now, when you guys are making your music, like, do you think about, like, what do you think? Like, do the fans come into the equation in your mind, or is it just, like, whatever you really want to do?
Not at all. Audience has, at least for me, I can't speak for the other guys. Audience has pretty much zero to do with how the writing process goes for me. Maybe in the production, you give a little bit more. I give a little more consideration to it at once the song is sort of shaped already. But I would say nothing to do with it when I'm writing a tune. What about you, Paul? That's an interesting question.
I think, I mean, it's not something that like. It's great because, yeah, I think because of what we said before, like, it's like our audience gives us the leeway to do it. You know, it's not like I feel like if we were a certain band that had, you know, like a very specific kind of pop hit, they would want you to do that again and again and again. And I'm sure that would get in my head every time I wrote. But like, since we have this relationship with our audience and with our fans and stuff like that, like, it's really we have their permission. You know, and it's like it's really freeing on our end, especially creatively. I think the only times we really think about the fans, obviously, is when we like do a set list, you know, and kind of think about like how like it makes us feel, how it makes people that are watching us feel when they go through the set with us, you know, the performance, you know. And we definitely think about them during the performance, and we definitely think about them while we're performing, mm-hmm. because it's such an interactive free for all, generally.
Yeah. So, I think you almost have a responsibility to your audience to not think about them when you're making music, because they're a fan of you and the way that you express yourself. And if you're thinking about them when you're creating, then you're not giving them what they're paying to see or what they're paying to hear. Your taste is the only taste. You're the only audience that you can really truly understand. So you're the one you should be writing for. And then, like Paul said, when you go to take it to the people, that's when you start thinking about them, when you perform it and show it.
Now, do you guys think when you're writing, like, oh, this song is going to be really awesome live, and you just can't wait to actually get out there and perform it live?
There are a couple, definitely. JFK was obviously written to have us throw down. I mean, like, it was, mm-hmm. it's something that, like, you know, like, you kind of like, we're like working through, and I'm like, oh God, this is big. This is huge. You know, like, obviously, like, you know, like, there are certain things that, like, you know, there are introspective songs that we, you know, that aren't, like, you know, like, we know that the feel of the certain songs that are just like kind of like more internalized, and there's certain songs that are just, you know, you feel like excited or anxious to you know, let go. So
that's a good, that adds an interesting wrinkle to what I just said about the last question, though, because I do think that we do consider the audience when we think about how we're going to play it live, and we do think about how things are going to sound in a room when you're performing, when you're writing. So maybe indirectly there is a little bit more consideration given to the audience than I was initially giving it credit for. Because, yeah, the live experience, like, you definitely think about how it, well, how's this going to feel when we play it, you know?
I'll take that back to the, I'll take it back to the Biffy Clyro comment. You know, like, that's our cut or keep moment, right? Is like when we're like playing these songs and it's like, does it make you feel?
Right.
And if it doesn't make you feel, then there's, we all will be like,
yeah.
Something's not there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess I never thought about it like that. I mean, it's definitely something, I think, more gut feeling. But yeah, it does involve like how the song kind of presents, you know?
Yeah. So.
All right, I'm going to bring it all the way back to the beginning because we kind of missed this somehow. I don't know. You were Spirit Animal. Now you're Record Heat. How'd you pick the name Record Heat?
Well, it was we had a...
It was a hot day.
...for the next record. And when we decided to change the name, that was like the first place we looked for inspiration. And it was kind of automatic. I don't think we put that much thought into it. We were like, oh, that's fucking cool. Let's do that. that's how I remember it.
Yeah, no, it was like a 15-minute conversation. I think we were like talking about it, and then Steve was like, okay, let me pull up the sheet real quick, you know, like see like all these like, you know, song titles and stuff, like, you know, all the little things we say in the van and like, you know, get written down in a Google Doc somewhere, and he pulls it up and he's just like, how about this one? We're like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then says like another one. I forget the other two. And then like,
I don't know.
He said Record Heat, and we were like, oh, you know, it's like one of those things where like, you know, everyone was in agreement, you know, just automatically. I think it's, you know, when everyone laughs at the same time and like does that thing, you know, then how can you not? So I think it's like literally like, yeah, a 10, 15 minute conversation.
And yeah. That's one of our central tenets of our process is you laugh. If everyone's laughing in the studio or in the writing room or whatever, that means it's probably a keeper. I heard Dave Cobb say that, I think, on an interview with Rick Rubin, too. I think that might be sort of a universal thing. If you're laughing, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah,
that's how Martin and I choose our fantasy football team names is, you know, whatever makes us laugh the most, then that's what's going out there.
Yeah. That's probably how we choose our team names too, but we're not going to share those with you.
Oh, come on. We have such things as Great Budgie and Sweaty Demons. Come on.
Sweaty
These are great
demons.
Names.
I like that. All right, we have to respect the privacy of our league.
Fair enough. Well, guys, I know we've had such a great time talking to you again, and so we want to give you the chance to tell all the folks where to find One and where to keep up with Record Heat.
You can find One wherever you stream music, Spotify, Tidal, Rhapsody, I don't know. Where
Apple Music.
Yeah, Apple Music is a huge supporter.
RecordHeat.us is the website, right?
Yeah, RecordHeat.us. Everything's RecordHeat.us. Look for that wherever you can find it. Facebook is an evil empire and won't let us change the name, but Instagram has
so figure that shit out.
Yeah. Record Heat US. Just keep looking for that and you'll find us for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I really enjoyed One and I look forward to Two. whatever it's gonna be.
Right. You got to keep you on your toes, man. It's going to be number like 3 or 4. I don't know.
Perfect.
You know, Straight Jacket Alcohol is another one of our team names if you want to use that.
Yeah, we'll start a Google Doc. The new one.
Well, Paul and Cal, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to hearing more music, and we look forward to talking to you again.
All right. Take care.
Thanks. All the best, guys.
Bye.
Bye now.
nothing is happening, nobody's making you famous. Wasted, can't even play tonight, I think I need a replacement. Shameless, I want a picture too, I want a picture too. Okay then, do what we wanna do, that's what we always do. Nathan couldn't really say that I'm the patient type. Blow me up overnight. I'm waiting, Nathan. Cavemen, we all get along as long as we're making our pay. We put in the time on the pavement. Statements. Everyone making them, everyone making them. Arrangements. Who gonna pay for them? Who gonna pay for them? You? Living in a four-wheel basement, two-star, 3-year vacation so far. Nathan. Never thought we'd ever get this far. But now we're on the cover, we're stars, 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 stars. You say you wanna do it too, huh? Can you tell me what's it to ya? Everybody's covered in scars, scars.